We've got 10 minutes. Oh, that's wonderful.
Better take our mics. Are you all right?
I'm okay.
My God, what happened?
Concussion.
Be careful.
Yes. So I cannot. What did happen? It must have been funny, no? You should have laughed.
It wasn't funny at all. So I think we'll just go straight into any points that people want to bring up. We can't really see from here because we're blinded by the light.
Yes.
But can we just have any questions, points, comments? Yes, please.
I think you need a mic.
Yeah.
No?
I think the mic is coming. Yes, the mic's just coming.
It's okay. Oh, well, my God, I don't want to.
I was just wanting to know, were you using Kodachrome?
No, it's all negative. So but you know, to have saturated color is very simple. Uh-huh. You shoot in the winter.
Yeah.
Pretty
yeah.
much everywhere. In France, it's much difficult to have saturated color, you know. Mm. In England, I will not risk it. Too much humidity in the air, you know. But in New York and in California, that film is totally shot in New York, obviously. It's very dry, and it's really the location. Everything is in the location, yeah. But it's also the time of the year. So, for instance, there is a film that some of you might have seen, and it's a beautiful film shot in New York by Chantal Ackerman, called News from Home. And that was shot at the end of June and early July, during 1 week. And June is June gloom, because you have a constant layer of dust in suspension in the air with the humidity, an increased humidity, because it's very hot in New York. So, you know, everything is gray, basically. And it was very important in News from Home. It just happened randomly, but I knew it would be like that. So I mentioned it to Chantal, because I obviously had lived in New York already 6 years. And
so were you making, well, the other question was, because I was thinking, oh, I wonder if this is like she's got a single system camera, you know, at that time.
No.
Or you had all the gear, you had the, because you were doing sync sound
recording. All the sound is done after the fact. I work like a silent filmmaker. I shoot images and I think sound separately.
And is this even when you're walking behind the man and you catch the piece of the
No, that was shot, everything was just shot Steadicam, and it's a very long movement. And you know, I kind of oriented the gyro for my cameraman, because he could carry the machine, but he was not. So I was using my hand to tell him, turn back and turn here, reaction to the sound. And I had a very good sound guy who was always staying behind both of us, because he knew then I will never get into the camera frame. And the camera person obviously cannot, but the sound person was always staying behind both of us, because I was interacting. And when I was making that gesture, he knew then we were going at 360 with the camera, which is really, oh my God, you know, not everybody can do that, I can tell you.
Can I just carry on.
Well, it was only just that there was such a fantastic, it was almost like you were anticipating Super 8.
It existed by then, but I hate the small format. I'm not really a snob of technique, because I have done films which are very poorly made. Tomorrow you're going to see one of them, actually. But I think expressivity is what counts for me. But I don't think Super 8 is I have ever been tempted by shooting Super 8, because I shoot 16 and 35 handheld. You know, pretty much everything was shot handheld except in the with the model, because that everything had to do with being very, very stationary. Yeah. And the big difference between part one and part two is the fact that in part one, I could, every time I put my effect of the shutter flipping, I could cut extra length in the footage, so I could retime what I had shot in the editing phase. But whatever was the camera motion in New York City, there's nothing I could do. It's very difficult to cut movement to movement. So you cut movement to another movement, and it's a terrible jump cut. And obviously, there's plenty of those in the film, but mostly I cut movement to something which is more static and start to move only after. So there's not much I could time with. I could not reshape the material at the editing, which you want to do, and that was a big limitation for me. So I transcended the limitation, which was visual, by putting more effort in inventing a different type of sound.
Anyone else? You got... Yes, there.
Thank you. My question was just about the models in the first part of the film.
The what?
The models.
Yes.
The models. I was just wondering if you briefed them and what you told them about what you were doing.
Oh, yes. No, but not only that, but I chose them very selectively. And I shot many that I did not use.
Okay. So you knew them all?
No. For instance... I knew very well Jim, the one I asked to be more seductive, you know, and I have a very long scene with him. Yeah. He was a very close friend.
Yeah.
And met him on the first film with Yvonne Rainer. He was a performer. And we wrote a script together on my third film, the film I made after. So I had a working relationship with him for a long time. John, which I met also in Yvonne's first film, as a performer, was a performer and came back as a friend, and that was not absolutely rehearsed, what he was saying. But for the model, it was not really rehearsed, but most of them, I asked them to come before, and I shot photograph. And I did the contact sheet, and I showed them the contact sheet and gave them picture if they wanted to. And they decided which things represented them, and we tried, when I had my movie camera, to restage those moments. Okay. So it was not improvised at all. And actually, I recruited Ava Petrides, which is the woman who has the very elegant pantsuit, which, you know, come in the light and does a lot with her face. She was an actress. Okay. And I'd recruited her, not knowing her, with a friend of mine who was a great actress and one of my closest friends, Saskia Nordekecht, so who is not in the film. So in many ways, it was calculated. Yeah, it's very calculated.
Okay, thank you.
But there's also moment which happened, you know, like I had no idea, Mimi Johnson, a close friend of mine, you know, suddenly turning, and she was so fucking beautiful, you know, then I say, oh my God, I got something there. You know, there are people who frontally don't show anything, but when they are sideways, suddenly they look like extraordinary. So, you know, I wanted that for you. You know, you can, looking at my movie, you know, see how can I do a better selfie, basically.
we just have 2 seconds. Anyone want to have any last points? There's someone at the back there. This has to be quite quick, I'm afraid.
Thank you. I'm thinking at the two films, and I really think of this camera pointing at photography, and
a film camera pointing at photography. Yeah.
And I'm thinking also at the portrait of the photographer, basically. And I'm wondering. My question is, like, if this camera is an analytical camera or more of a critical camera, a critique at photography. And if I can add just a little thing, like, I know at the same time you were documenting a lot of performance art, is also a way of videoing or filming of or showing the performativity of photography?
Mm-hmm. The performance art, I want to treat it as a separate question, so you can rephrase it after I answer to the first one. So I thought I'm primarily a filmmaker, and I'm very instinctive. For instance, when I started the model, I wanted to do something about my practice of photography, but my practice is to shoot performance, and I decided to do something I'd never done, really, which is to shoot faces. And I say, I'm going to learn how to shoot faces. Why did I decide on that? Because basically, it's the AB of photography and the most useful function of a photographer at the time I made the film about photography. It's actually the headshot for somebody who goes to who needs a resume, or a headshot for his resume, or an actor who wants to get a job, or whatever. So it's the beginning of the alphabet in photography, to shoot a face. So I thought I will start with that, and I will deal separately with what is behind the face, which is the architecture, the three-dimensionality. So the idea of one and two was immediately in my first concept, but how I will make it a film and not something which is a dry, how to do, technical text, which obviously I didn't want to do. For me, what is important is to communicate sensibility to what it is to look and what it is to make a decision for a certain image, at the beginning, and also what it is to look when you are moving in the space. When do you stop to actually looking? Do you continue, running in the space or stopping? So the whole point of the two parts were actually elaborated while shooting and while I was thinking what I should have done and looking at my footage. And I worked for like 6 months on the model and 6 months on the shooting occasionally on the street footage. So it was not ever scripted. I had a structure to start, and that's it. And everything went from that to the elaboration of the final film. Now, your question about performance, I did not really read it. I read it in the context of your original question, critical or analytical. I think I'm totally analytical, and I'm not interested in critique. Actually, critique for me is the end of any kind of art. It's the dumbest position you can have, because, who am I to think I know more than you do, So I feel then what is most important is to give you the ability to be critical of my work, rather than me presenting you a position as a critique of something already made, or I will show you. So I'm not interested in deciding if I'm right or wrong, But you can decide if you want. So I think for me, the ideal spectator can be critic of my work, and you can tell me something which you have gotten from looking at the film, or something which was not given to you and you will have liked to have. But my methodology is always analytical, because I start and I go to the process of doing something, and in doing it, I realize that does not work, so I'm going to do something else, and I proceed from there. I proceed from an experimental point of view, which start with a problematic, and move the problematic a little bit further, exactly like if I was, experimenting physics. My closest friend is a physician, or if I was continuing doing mathematics, I don't see any difference between me and a scientist. I think I proceed the same way.
So, unfortunately, we'll have to stop there. I just want to end.
I did not answer his question about performance, no?
He'll have to take it up tomorrow.
I see.
Because we have another screening happening here. And
with longer discussion.
Yes. And that was my fault, and I really apologize, because I was self-indulgent with my introduction.
But that was perfect.
But I just wanted to end with something that Babette has said. Then she says, there's something repressed in mainstream culture.
that making a film about making photographs from the point of view of the photographer opens up, and this is my brand of feminism. So I'm just picking up her last point of just opening up new ways of thinking, new ways of seeing, new ways.
Yeah, that's exactly why I made the short film, actually, because at the end, it's for us. You know, what I do is for you, basically. It's not for me. Me, you have seen my eye, and you're interested or not, but definitely I think the work is done for people I don't know, like you. I don't know none of you, actually.
I do hope you'll be able to come tomorrow when we'll have a much longer and more wide-ranging discussion, and we'll be joined by Lucy Reynolds. Yeah. Thank you very much, Babette.
Thank you.